Hello, and welcome back to SIGGRAPH Spotlight. For our last episode of 2021, we're looking to the future through a follow-up conversation from this summer's Birds of a Feather session, Building the Open Metaverse, which was organized by CCM's Patrick Cozy and Mark Petit of Epic Games. Without further delay, here is SIGGRAPH 2022 General Submissions Chair Chris Redman with Patrick and Mark.
Hello, welcome to an all-new SIGGRAPH Spotlight. My name is Chris Redman. I'm a software engineer at Netflix, but I've been involved in a number of different roles that encompass different aspects of what might be in the metaverse through computer graphics and visual effects, animation, and gaming. And today we're here to chat with the leaders of a community-organized session during SIGGRAPH 2021 on building the open metaverse. So let's kick things off by first allowing each of you to introduce yourselves and share with our listeners a bit about your journey to date in computer graphics. How about we begin with you, Mark?
Well, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. We had fun at the SIGGRAPH event. So I can give you a quick background. Very big fan of SIGGRAPH. I think it was my first SIGGRAPH was back in 1889. I started my career back at TDI in 1988, actually moved to Softimage in 1991, where I got to lead Softimage 3D and then lead the team who designed something called XSI, which is still near and dear to my heart as a great software engineer products. I stayed there until 2002, where I moved to Autodesk to lead what's currently known as the Media Entertainment Division. At the time, it was called Discrete. And one thing I did there was to lead the Alias acquisition, so to bring Maya into the fold alongside 3ds Max to make sure we had a good portfolio of solutions. I did that until 2013 for 11 years, where I, you know, the entrepreneur in me, you know, was interested, and I did a few things like Fabric Engine. I was involved with Fabric Engine as a chairman, and then a lot of WebGL startups, actually. The hall that we sold to Box and ExoCortex was now called Threekit and a very successful company. And then the calling of Epic came in 2016, where they felt that there was no opportunity for the Unreal Engine outside of games. And so they brought me in to manage that. And that's what I've been doing for the past 5 years, making sure that the Unreal Engine is good supporting solutions for the world of computer graphics outside of games. So that's the short version of it.
Thank you so much, Mark. How about you, Patrick?
Hi, Chris. Yeah, thank you for having us today. We did have a great time at the SIGGRAPH BOF. So I'm Patrick from Cesium, and I think like many kids in the 80s, I had a Nintendo, and that made me really interested in both playing games, but eventually making games. And when I got my first PC in the mid-90s, I discovered QBasic, which was it was free. It came with DOS from Microsoft, and I really didn't even know I was programming when I first was going through the help file and trying to put things together and calling into the local BBSs to try to get some help. But that led to me doing a lot of games when I was in high school and QBasic and Turbo Pascal, some assembly as well. And then after I finished undergrad, I wanted to do graphics. You know, that was my favorite part of games. And I joined a company outside of Philadelphia, very cool aerospace company called Analytical Graphics. And they were literally doing rocket science to propagate satellites. And they also had this 3D visualization. You'd see the globe spinning, you'd see satellites orbiting. So I got to work in that 3D engine. At the same time, I went and studied graphics at University of Pennsylvania, which introduced me to SIGGRAPH. So Mark, my first SIGGRAPH was 2008. So just slightly after yours. And then I've worked a bit in academia teaching GPU programming, written or contributed to a number of books in WebGL, OpenGL, graphics and games. Cesium has been all about bringing 3D geospatial and the scanned physical world to the digital world. We started it at AGI, and we're fortunate to spin it out into a standalone company in 2019. And then it's interesting, I say we've always been working on the metaverse. We just didn't know it until recently. Then I've also finally done a lot of work in the open standards world with Kronos in graphics, and then with OGC, Open Geospatial Consortium, in the mapping world.
Great, thanks for that. So I appreciate both of you taking the time to join me today. And as I shared in the introduction, we brought you here to expand on the building the open metaverse discussion that you started during SIGGRAPH 2021 and the follow-up podcast that you've begun. Before we talk about the podcast, though, let's level set for listeners with some background on the discussion you hosted, as well as what the metaverse is itself. So for the purposes of this discussion, and particularly because there are a number of varied descriptions about what the metaverse is. Can one or both of you first share a definition of your interpretation of the metaverse?
We have a very broad view of the metaverse. We think it's, you know, maybe the simplest view of it is the extension of the internet to real-time 3D and immersive interactive technologies, which allows to give, you know, better experiences. It's nowhere linked to any physical device. It's actually, you know, the world we live in is dominated by, you know, platform based on digital pictures, digital video. We believe the next generation of the internet will heavily leverage immersive interactive contents. So it's not related to VR specifically, but it's a lot about having agency on the content. And it's a lot about having multi-user capability and being social first. So that's, at the end of the day, for me, the big draw of the metaverse is to do a lot of things we like to do, or, you know, the way we like to learn, work, be with people, but do it with the people we need to be with. And I think that social first approach was going to make the metaverse such a huge change in our lives.
Great. So on to the session, and using that as context, the session itself at SIGGRAPH lasted nearly 2 hours and was broken into four distinct parts: platforms and engines, merging the physical and digital worlds, big questions and opportunities, and finally, interoperability and standards. So given all that, what inspired you first to start up the Birds of a Feather session and to introduce that to the SIGGRAPH community?
So we thought that the SIGGRAPH community was the perfect place to have this conversation, right? A lot of the technology advancements that are enabling the metaverse, whether it be game engines, whether it be GPUs, VR, eventually wearable ARs, that's all happening in the SIGGRAPH community. So we thought that we wanted to bring that community together to talk about where we are and where we could go in the metaverse.
It was a real natural place, you know. SIGGRAPH is kind of the mecca, always been the mecca of computer graphics, and real-time 3D is computer graphics in real time. So it felt very natural. And we actually, you know, we got oversubscribed in a heartbeat when we said we want to talk about this. We had people knocking at the door because people felt, one, that it was very relevant, you know, for the SIGGRAPH community. And then people from the SIGGRAPH community also have this passion for open software. And, you know, when we say that the metaverse is bigger than any single company and open, it needs to be open and fair. I mean, that's a message that resonates with a lot of people. And so everybody wanted to be part of it. Was happy we started the conversation and wanted to be part of it. So it was a shoe-in when it came to SIGGRAPH, clearly.
Oh, I think that often even longtime SIGGRAPH attendees forget about that computer graphics and interactive techniques part of the conference, and that this really embodies a merging of those two worlds. But I'll pick up on what you talked about there with the open standards. And that's something that a number of people have raised, both during the conference itself, but then since one of your podcasts focused specifically on that. So how do you anticipate the standards for the generation of content and the viewing of content? There are a lot of these components. How do you envision that moving forward? And do you think there needs to be a standards committee devoted specifically to content and development for the metaverse?
So, Chris, it's interesting you bring this up, and you talked about the four categories we had at the SIGGRAPH session, with the one of them being interoperability and standards. Well, when this session kind of came to fruition, it was clear that interoperability and standards was a theme that went through every single presentation, which is great. And then, as Mark and I have done the podcast, pretty much every episode has some talk about interoperability and standards. And if you look at the internet, right, there's HTTP, there's FTP, all of these standards and protocols help make it open and collaborative so that many participants can join and many organizations can help build. We need the same thing for the metaverse. It's at a new level of sophistication when you look at real-time immersive 3D content. And I think that there's going to be standards that are available to use today. If you look at USD and GLTF, and I think there's going to be many more that we're going to need to help create to go to a fully simulated world. I think many standards bodies will participate, and that we need the collaboration of them working together.
And the context is very different. I mean, interoperability for the internet was mandated. And in the metaverse, we at the committee has to give ourselves the mandate to create something that is open. And so that's why, you know, we felt even more compelled to have a strong message there, because it's upon us. It's kind of a historical responsibility. I mean, we're the beginning of something, and we need to hopefully set it, you know, set it on the right track. So I think it's going to be, you know, this thing is about metaverse, or we see how much those digital platforms, how much room they take in our lives. So I think we all know, especially after almost 2 years of pandemic, that we need to take this seriously. And it's the community needs to really embrace that opportunity and step up. So we're just kind of the voice. And hopefully if we can be the catalyst of something, we'll be super happy.
Oh, certainly. I think I completely agree that there really need to be standards in place, and that the community needs to get together to work on how this should be put out there to the greater community and see how that can be implemented. So how do you think, though, that might dovetail with some of the strong commercial efforts that we see in the space? For instance, Facebook has obviously changed their name to Meta and is pushing on this metaverse platform, which may not be the open standard. And so how can we as a community continue to push on these open standards and this discussion to make sure that walled gardens don't exist within the metaverse?
I think the first thing is, you know, it's vigilance, voting with your dollars or your presence. You know, when you think about the metaverse, there's two big topics. You know, the foundation is going to be identity and ownership. You know, how you present your identity and, you know, how do you own stuff, you know, and having both identity and ownership independent of platforms is going to be a new concept already. And so we need to be supportive of those efforts. And there's, you know, we're still blabbing in the very, very basic stuff. We're still talking about attributes and behaviors and try to exchange a little bit more. We're kind of okay. We're okay on geometry, kind of okay on materials, but we're far away from a global interoperability model. But I think, you know, if we can, you know, get people sensitive to the importance, at least around identity and ownership and creating open platform for those, or federated platforms for those, I think it can influence the commercial endeavors. But at the end of the day, it's as consumer as citizens that we have to do something. It's to influence them. There's no other way. Or and engaging into the community, you know. But that's how we create the balance, I believe. Right, Patrick?
Yeah, I agree, Mark. And Chris, we do see everyone is talking about an open metaverse, right? And I think we have to hold ourselves and hold everyone accountable to seeing through with that. And we do have the internet as an example, as a successful example of what openness has created.
We also have mobile platforms as an example of things, but it's good. So we can learn from both, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it is that accountability really needs to be held true to make this successful. So I appreciate that you really see that as a very strong component of the discussion. So going back to the original Birds of a Feather session, you had mentioned this was split into those four groups that we articulated earlier. And why did you choose to structure it in that way? So it was broken into those four parts.
So Chris, we didn't choose the structure. I mean, the structure chose us, right? So many people signed up. So many people wanted to present. But from the time we submitted the idea for the BOF to the time of SIGGRAPH, the metaverse had so much momentum. And when we looked at the folks who were presenting and the topics that they wanted to share, it kind of naturally segmented itself into the platforms and the engines, the enabling software technology, to the merging of the physical and digital world, digital twins and scanning the real world. And then the third was the big and open topics. And finally, the interoperability and standards, which did kind of dovetail through everything.
Since the session itself isn't available anymore, as the organizers of the session, what were your big takeaways? And were there any things that really opened your eyes to aspects you hadn't seen? Or do you think that there were things that really the community should know that came out of that session?
The surprise, a little bit of a surprise was the you know, the level of engagement of everybody into the conversation and how people had, you know, felt the importance of being part of the, you know, the metaverse conversation. And there was a violent agreement around the necessity to create open. I mean, nobody has a clear line of sight on what to do, but I felt that the energy around keeping everything open and people being very honest about how much work this is going to take, so how much humility is going to take to actually create the platform in a way that's going to be, you know, that's going to be truly open and fair. So I felt it was a good and positive moment. I tend to be an optimist in life, but there was nobody. People were so well intentioned and ready to roll up their sleeve and engaged. It was a very, very good feeling. That's what I remember of it. A lot of smart things were said. You know, we had some really good people around the table. You know, when Mark Sagar talks about digital human, I mean, he knows what he's talking about. And every single speaker, you know, brought a lot to the table. But I think it's the collective energy that I remember and it's being something good. And that's why we created the podcast. We could say, hey, we have to go somewhere from this momentum and this energy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a 2-hour session at SIGGRAPH. I feel that we could have filled an entire day. So kind of one of my takeaways was this was a conversation starter among the open metaverse.
I think one of the real strengths, and you hinted at this, Mark, is of the session was the diversity of inputs that came into the session. And I think the people that were brought there were from a number of different industries and verticals and areas of focus. And I think that really brought the conversation to a higher level. And I think it really did uncover a lot of additional questions and additional thoughts and really just inspired people to think more broadly about the implications of creating the metaverse. And as you mentioned, this is what then drove the creation of the podcast. And so you have a number of episodes that are out there to date. And where do you see that going? And how do you want to continue as the organizers of the podcast as well? How do you want to continue that discussion through the podcast?
The podcast, it was a straight continuation of the energy. We were not too sure about the format. We ended up being a lot of one-on-ones, actually having one, trying to go deeper on one topic with one person rather than having multiple person around, you know, for the sake of the depth of the conversation. You know, we wanted it to be, I mean, we're geeks, so it's, you know, by geeks for geeks, but keeping it accessible and trying to keep it relevant and really trying. Our questions are super simple. We just hand the microphone to our smart guys and they just like tell us what they think about the metaverse because everybody has an opinion. Actually, it's not a lot of work from our perspective, but it's very interesting week after week to see, you know, the themes, you know, and I hope that's what people take away from the podcast. It's kind of a unedited by the real people who are actually doing it. So not people who talk about things, but people who do things. That's kind of our line. You know, when we invite people, we don't want people that talk about talking. We like people that are actually can speak to what they're to this thing they do. And as a result, they speak with passion and with depth and with knowledge. And I think it will allow everybody to kind of form a point of view from the diversity of those opinions and experiences. That's really, and you know, every week we have like 3 or 4 more people that either raise their hand and say, hey, but if we talk to this guy, we should talk to this guy. So the list of list of guests is getting longer every week, which I think is a good thing. And, you know, as long as we have people with interesting stuff too, they will continue doing it. I would say that would be the thing. We stay away from marketing speak and we stay away from, it's just a soapbox for the people from the community. And, you know, I think it's, again, there is so much passion and interest around the topic that I'm pretty convinced, you know, for the foreseeable future, we'll have good people that want to come and talk about what they're doing. So,
I mean, in many ways, we're kind of making the podcast about the open metaverse that we want to listen to, right, from the folks who are building it. And Chris, if you know anyone that you think should come on the podcast or any of our listeners do, please let us know.
So the building of the metaverse isn't something that's going to be done overnight, for sure. And there are initial steps that have been put into place, and you kind of touched on these both in the session and then afterwards on some of the standards that are out there, both for content creation and also for distribution in kind of a runtime format. But what do you see as kind of the challenges and kind of the next set of challenges and those big hurdles that really need foundational thought before we can start to worry about implementation? But what is your take? I'd just like to hear that.
I mean, Chris, that's a pretty deep question. So, you know, we try to keep this pragmatic and as much as possible action-oriented. We know that exchanging simulated worlds is not something is going to happen overnight. We in the industry have the scars of trying to exchange materials for the past 15 years. So we got to have to be modest in our ambitions. And that's why, you know, we try to highlight possible paths. So the, you know, USD is an open source implementation of something that's very interesting. And then GLTF is a community driven open standards, very different by nature conversation. We're trying to see, you know, can we get those two things kind of on converging path or parallel path, try to, you know, move from objects to smarter objects, some behaviors to maybe scenes, maybe to simulated world. I mean, have kind of this crawl, walk, run, fly approach to things. And it's really up to us, the community. And so that's why we try. What's interesting in the podcast, we get to talk to people from Roblox and from NVIDIA, and we talk to the architects there, and they tend to have this, share the same pragmatic view about, let's try to do something and let's be modest initially so that we got something that's rewarding and a positive step forward. We have great supporting conversation, you know, from the Kronos, from Neil at the Kronos Foundation, and from the guys at USD and from the Academy Software Foundation. So I think it's, you know, it's that momentum building exercise, which is important now, you know, make it happen in a way that it creates a rewarding experience for everybody. And then I think we can build from there. So I think it's the key is the momentum right now, is to do something and stop talking about it, you know. So having a bias for action over conversation, that's really the key. Otherwise, we'll be talking about it in 20 years in committees, and I don't think we'll have achieved much. But I think, again, between USD and GLTF, there's a very, very strong foundation, and let's build on top of that. And again, I think the people who are building it, I mean, people in boardrooms may have different point of view about, you know, creating competitive separations and barrier, but I think the people from the community who are building it, I think they sincerely are interested in implementing open platforms. And so if we engage them, and that's what we're trying to do, I think there is a path. And again, I'm an optimist.
Yeah, I think that bias to action is so important. And that reminded me of one of the people we had on the podcast was Vlad from Unity, who also started WebGL. And he said something I thought was really, really simple, but really great, which was, we want to encourage folks to experiment in the open, right? Because we all want interoperability for an open metaverse. To get interoperability, we need open standards. But then there's a timing of, is it too soon or too late to standardize something, right? So when you have that experimentation in the open, things start becoming very clear on kind of that path that we can take.
I certainly agree with all of that. And I think that the optimism is key in the communication. And I think that my take, and I'd like to hear if you think differently, but in the last 20, 25 years, we've seen a big push towards a lot more open community, and especially coming from the visual effects and animation side, where everything was proprietary and walled off to as you mentioned, the Academy Software Foundation, and those things where we've realized as a community that we're stronger when we communicate the ideas, and that the ideas that we have individually within an organization are usually the same challenges that are faced by our peers. And so how do you think that timing of all of this then plays into that now really seems to be the good moment to push on this agenda?
What's interesting is at the same moment that we talk about interop, we have all of those, the taking off of that digital goods, digital collectibles, or digital art market with the associated crypto component to it. And so that adds a layer of a sense of urgency, because, you know, and also a layer of complexity, because the decentralization of the, you know, at the core of the crypto world right now, and things like the blockchain is really a challenge from a, you know, efficiency and regulation perspective. So that's why it's all the more important to me when you layer all of those and NFT craziness plus the promise of the metaverse plus big corporations saying they want to invest tens of billions of dollars into it and are actually doing it. For me, that's all the reasons to go back to the basic and create the foundation to actually solve the hardcore problems of interoperability. But I think that that whole context of NFTs and crypto and metaverse being, you know, my mother knows about the metaverse, believe it or not. I think it creates a sense of urgency and importance. And I think that contributes to that energy around the conversation. And I think what we're trying to do with Patrick is convert that energy into something that's a force for good to solve some of those basic problems so that, you know, we allow business to evolve without technology to evolve, but we do it with a sense of commonality and shared basic assets, share 3D objects, you know, share those elements. So.
And Chris, we hope that, right, the creation of open standards and facilitating that interoperability, it facilitates business. It helps us grow the pie bigger and faster than we would with just walled gardens.
Well, I think those open standards allow for experimentation, and they allow for people that may not be part of one of those large companies that's able to invest millions or billions of dollars into this to still have a voice in this community and still have a way of contributing back and pushing on what they think the metaverse should be in a meaningful way. So I think, you know, one of the things that I'd just like to hear is kind of what's next on the podcast and kind of what's coming up in the near term and what can we look forward to?
As I said, I mean, we're going down the list of, again, people who are actually having a meaningful technical contribution building the metaverse, and we'll put a microphone in front of them. Again, we'll collect their thoughts so that people like you, Chris, or anybody listening can actually, you know, understand better and get this diversity of point of view. I think it was something that was near and dear to us in the beginning is, you know, let's make sure the metaverse is like the internet. It's a very, very broad topic. So you have to go at it from multiple angles. And so I think we want to continue to do that. I think it's, you know, we don't have a goal. The goal is to soapbox and sustain the conversation so that maybe next year at SIGGRAPH, you know, there's a bigger conversation or somebody picks it up and, you know, we actually start to get something done around interoperability. So we're actually, you know, very open-minded. We certainly don't know where this is going. Do you know, Patrick, where we're going with this?
All I know is we record almost one episode a week.
Yeah, and we have demand for two. So the thing that's not in my mind is, where are we going to be in the hype cycle? Because one of the things I think is important is be the antidote to the hype cycle. You know, and keep things grounded and keep moving through the hype cycle, because, you know, the hype cycle is going to be high, but very low lows after that. And we've seen in VR, you know, and all of that stuff, and this 3D stereoscopic and everything. We think the metaverse is here to stay, unlike those, you know. For me, the metaverse should not go through any sort of trough of disillusion. I think we have to make it work, and it's a 5 or 10 year endeavor. And we have no time to go through those cycles. We kind of have to keep working through. I think we could still be in the hype cycle next summer. But again, we want to create enough momentum and enough action that, you know, a trough of disillusion doesn't really happen. That would be kind of one of my personal goals.
That's certainly a very admirable goal. And I think that your initial comments about the metaverse and about your discussions really focus on that call to action. And so it isn't something that should just be discussed ad infinitum, but people need to know how they can start to make an impact and start to move this forward in a meaningful way. Because yes, we've seen any number of industries come and go through that trough of disillusionment, and people, once we start to lose the community, I think it'll be much harder to continue the push to building a real version of this that is something that I think we all share the same vision for.
Absolutely.
So I think that's all the time that we have for today. Thanks again to Patrick and Mark for joining us. I really appreciate you leading this conversation and kind of pushing on the community to become involved.
Well, thank you very much for having us. A big thank you for SIGGRAPH for allowing us to do that event. A big thank you to Patrick, because in all honesty, he was the one that called me up and said, hey, we need to do this SIGGRAPH both. And I think it was a great idea, and it turned out to be a great personal experience. And hopefully, if it helps, you know, raise the awareness and move the ball forward, it's all we can hope for.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chris. And thank you so much, SIGGRAPH, for bringing the community together, and for Mark for facilitating all this.
And lastly, we've mentioned this podcast a number of times, but how can people find where they can listen to this podcast?
Well, it's on your favorite podcast platform. It's called Building the Open Metaverse. I think you can find it on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on a number of places. And Cesium is kind enough to host a lot of links. So if you go to cesium.org, in the blog section, you'll find summaries of the episodes. And I have to give credit to Patrick and his team to do a fantastic job to do transcription and to manage all of that. So yeah, Building the Open Metaverse. This is what, just Google it, you'll find it. It's on YouTube as well. If you want to see how ugly Patrick and I are, there is a video version on YouTube. So.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Chris. It was great.
Thank you, Chris.
We hope you've enjoyed this year of podcasts and cannot wait to bring you more SIGGRAPH Spotlight in 2022. If you like the show, please subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Every review helps others find us. For more information on SIGGRAPH 2022 and the Building the Open Metaverse podcast, check out the links in our show notes.